Our theme for this month is giant gentleness, and these two words together are quite interesting. It's a combination of giant, which suggests immense strength and power and hugeness, and then there is gentleness, which is the idea of a soft touch. And together, these two words suggest our theme that gentleness, expressed through the light touch of loving kindness, has the huge power to guide us through life and also to strengthen and enrich our relationships and help create a better world. Now, last week we focused on applying gentleness to our relationships, emphasizing four ideas, which I'll summarize here. And the first one is to first tune into the source of all that is, and that is the foundation of our teaching, that there is a creative power in the universe and that we are part of it, and sometimes we just forget that. And then through spiritual practice, we can reconnect with that. That's the foundation of our teaching. The second idea from last week is we can, through spiritual practices, choose to be present for life and to listen attentively, particularly to those people we are in a relationship with, because it leads to understanding and it strengthens relationship and, again, it builds a better world. And then the third idea was the invitation to develop a strong sense of who you are, what you stand for in life, which comes from practicing the first two steps, and it also helps with overwhelm. And then the third step is to try on the mindset of being a witness to life with less fix-it energy and more letting it be energy. Now, this week, our focus expands to taking it to the street, which to me means broadening these four ideas beyond just only personal relationships into all of life. Now, we started with personal relationships and applying gentleness in it because, frankly, it's easier to start with the people we already love. Not always easy, but still, as hard as it is, it's a little more accessible. Why? Because there is likely already a foundation of love there. Think for a moment of somebody you love dearly. Think for a moment of someone who loves you dearly. And think of the affection that is present there. That affection, even when under stress, provides the foundation in the environment for forgiveness and sharing and transparency and trust to be more accessible. Now, when we take our loving kindness and we go beyond that circle of close, intimate relationships, some of that foundation of goodness may not be present. So we have the opportunity then to practice staying in our heart, especially when closeness and affection have not yet been developed. I'm reading this lovely book, Humankind, by Rutger Bregman, and in it the author suggests that humans, you and I, are naturally decent. Whether they know each other or not, they're decent to each other. Now, Rutger in this book tells about a professor of psychology in Holland who has been asking his students for years and years and years this same question. He begins by asking them to imagine a scenario in which an airplane is making an emergency landing that doesn't go so well. And it breaks into three parts as it crashes on the runway. And there's smoke and fire. And in the cabin, everybody realizes we've got to get out of this immediately if we are to live. Then he offers two scenarios. Now, on planet A, the passengers ask their neighbors if they are okay. They help those who need assistance to get out of the plane, and people are willing to give way and even give their lives and their support, even for perfect strangers. That's Planet A. Planet B, the passengers leave each other to fend for themselves. Panic breaks out, and people get trampled in the chaos as each person strives to save themselves. Now, the question that the professor has been asking the students for all these years is this: which planet do we live on? A or B? And in his estimation, he says about 97% of people believe that we all live on Planet B, the selfish, chaotic response planet. And he says it doesn't matter in his experience who you ask, left wing, right wing, rich, poor. The majority of people, he asks, tend to not know that history shows us over and over and over again that we actually live on Planet A. Overwhelmingly so. And the book is filled with research and history and stories that support it. Beautifully annotated, so you can go check. Now, by the way, if you want to get this book, I know you can get it on Amazon quicker and faster and cheaper. But if you go to our bookstore, give us the opportunity to serve you. We'll take your name and we'll order it for you. Then you can come back next week and have it. Delayed gratification is good for you. Now, take, for example, when the Titanic sank. Despite how it may have been portrayed in the movies, eyewitness reports say that evacuation was actually quite orderly. One eyewitness said there was absolutely no indication of panic or hysteria at all. People were helping each other. When the Twin Towers burned on September 11th, thousands of people descended the stairs, and eyewitness reports say, quite calmly. One eyewitness said that he was touched or impressed with how many times he heard, "No, you first, take my place, go that way," even though their lives were in danger, imminent danger. In the book, he also points to the horrific news after Hurricane Katrina, after it tore through New Orleans, and the stories of rape and murder and looting flooded the news and terrorized us all, and then months later was shown to be inaccurate and false. That instead, what happened in that city also included an overrunning of courage and charity and strength of character and collaboration and mutual community support. Overwhelmingly so. From the book, if we believe most people can't be trusted, that's how we'll treat them. To everyone's detriment. Few ideas have as much power to shape the world as the view we have of other people. Now listen to this line. It could come straight from one of our classes. Because ultimately, you get what you expect to get. Wow. Now, for as long as I can remember, I have heard the phrase, we are living in the most divisive times in human history. Now, I question whether that is an accurate statement or not. You know, I love watching documentaries on history. And for example, I recently watched the one on Napoleon Bonaparte. I'm looking forward to the one on Benjamin Franklin. And I was thinking about others, or that mini-series on Shaka Zulu, the history of the Zulu people in South Africa, and World War II from the front lines, and Einstein and the bomb, and Alexander, the making of a god, and Bobby Kennedy for president, you know. And I was thinking about those and how they portray life. And now I have a different perspective on divisiveness. Because maybe divisive times have always been present, or at least that is how they are portrayed to be. But after reading some of Rutger's book, what I am now equally sure of is that along with challenging times comes the opportunity for us to be decent. And we like that. We like to be decent. Life continues to give us the opportunity to practice staying tuned into our center of peace and to practice the soft touch of giant gentleness in the form of loving kindness so that we can be our best selves in this world. And at the center, we learn about spiritual practices, how to use them so that when we are faced with challenges, we have a strong foundation and a better chance of staying true to our natural inclination to be kind, even when it is difficult to do so. And there are times when it's difficult to do so. Before I became the minister at the Center for Spiritual Living, I was a pastoral care minister in Southern California, and it was my job to visit people in the hospital who were very ill, and it was at the height of the AIDS epidemic, and people were dying quickly. And after, well, so many visits, I realized I needed to do something, because if I wanted to stay in tune with, in touch with the wholeness of spirit, I needed to do something because I was losing it. I was losing my connection to the idea of spiritual wholeness. So I developed a practice. When it was time for me to visit someone in the hospital, I had to prepare myself. I would pull into the parking lot because I knew what I was about to see was going to challenge me. It was compelling and it was real and it could easily overtake my mind. So I would sit outside in my car in the parking lot and I would say to myself some of the things I learned at the center. Like, there is only one life and that life is spirit and it is expressing perfectly. It is my life right now. And so my mind I think of as a center of divine activity within the mind of creation, centered in compassion, guided by loving kindness. And I know I am in the right place at the right time, successfully engaged in the right activity. And I would talk to myself. I would talk to myself and I would stay with it until I knew I could get out of the car and walk into the visiting room and see that person through the filter of spiritual wholeness. And I remember one man in particular that I went to see who was very, very ill. And his body had been ravaged by the virus, and it challenged me, you know, to look at him. And he was a student of science of mind, of metaphysics, and he could see that I was shaken by what I saw. And so he called me close, and he whispered gently into my ear. He said, "Look, I'm counting on you to know the truth about me, because everyone else around me here, all they can see is just the sickness and the hospital equipment. I'm counting on you." And with that, he called me back to my true self. So I took a breath and remembered what I said in the car and tuned back into the compassionate presence within. And then from that frame of mind, I could choose to be absolutely present for him without pity, without advice, without correction, without having to be strong or fearless or anything. Just in that moment, I was able to see him as he really was, a radiant, whole spirit with a mind and a body. That was my work to do. And that's what he wanted and needed, and I could be there for it. Now, I didn't know him. He wasn't a friend. He wasn't family. But in that moment, he became all of that. And I could see him with my heart. Now, the interesting thing about him was that he wasn't denying his physical challenges. He knew what was happening. But at the same time, it was important for him to be able to identify himself with his eternal, inherently complete spirit. And he wanted someone to partner with him, to join him in the knowledge of his spiritual well-being, no matter what it looked like. And I felt blessed that I had the opportunity to be present for that. Be present. We talked about that last week, about making a conscious choice to be present for the relationships in our life. And today we are expanding that, broadening that beyond our close relationships to be present. And here's the question that is in my heart. Where does life need me to be more mindfully present? Or I could ask it like this. Where have I started to care less? And where is the opportunity for me to choose to mindfully be more present? Suffering sometimes in the world causes me to want to shut down. You know, it's so much. Sometimes I want to check out. I don't want to be present. Our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, he invited us over and over again not to check out, not to turn away from the suffering of the world, but to turn to it. Yes, specifically is what he said. We must be willing to place ourselves in the other person's position with true compassion. Understand their thoughts and feelings, not as one caught up in them or distraught by them, but as one bringing their own light to the situation so that they can find their own way. Now, he says, if we think we can approach others in their time of need without this deep inward feeling of oneness, we are fooling ourselves. Our words will be empty and will not connect with the suffering of humanity. It's very clear on that. You see that part? You got to connect. I like to take his words and reframe them as an affirmation. And so here's what I did with those words. I am willing to listen to others about their thoughts and feelings and to maintain a deep inward feeling of oneness so that I can get clear on what is mine to do and say and think. I do that with earnest words. I make them my own. And this quote of his brings me back to our topic, taking it to the streets. And that brings up the question that many students of this teaching have about getting involved with worldly matters in the streets. Some sincerely ask, should we be thinking about social justice and politics and charitable causes, or should we instead rather focus entirely on prayer and meditation and service, etc.? Well, our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, he answered that over and over again. And it's not a yes or no, it's a both and question, of course it would be. And it goes something like this: you're here to do what is yours to do, you do you. But whatever you do, consider tuning into that presence within first, like I did sitting outside the hospital in the car. Tune into that presence first. So whatever you choose to do in the world, however you choose to show up in the world, it comes from a consciousness of unity rather than a consciousness of avoidance. You figure that out. And he said, in doing this, meaning connecting to the spirit within, in doing this, we shall discover that loving kindness is the lodestone of life. The lodestone. Do you know what a lodestone is? I didn't. I had to look it up. A lodestone is a naturally magnetic stone that attracts certain metals. It was one of the first navigation tools. And the word lode is Old English for way. So a lodestone is a way shower. So loving kindness shows us the way. I love that. And I'm convinced that it is true. Because when I withhold loving kindness, I lose my way. I lose my sense of self. Indeed, when I withhold loving kindness, I feel like I'm going against my true self. So then this week, my work could be this. Whatever I'm learning about, whatever I'm getting into, whatever I'm facing, politics, civic matters, personal challenges, doctor visits, my work can be, once again, first tune into the presence within and do it so frequently that my experience of it is so familiar that I know my way back to it easily when I start to forget. Now, I call that presence within by many names, as I'm sure you do. Sometimes I call it the living spirit within. Sometimes I call it the seat of consciousness within. Sometimes I just call it goodness. Sometimes I call it loving kindness. And frequently I ask myself this: what would goodness have me do here? Or what would loving kindness have me see here? Or what would the presence have me say here? Or what would spirit have me be here? Or what would the mind of creation have me know here? Now, this month so far in summer, we started with personal gentleness with Reverend Russ. Then we moved to gentleness through relationship. And this week, we are expanding beyond the personal relationship with gentleness. And then next week, we're expanding even further to cosmic gentleness. That's going to be amazing. But for now, let us pray together. I invite you to breathe in. And as you exhale, let these words be as if they are your own or words similar to them. And if it is comfortable for you to do so, let your eyes close. Right now, in this moment, I consciously relax my body by gently easing my thoughts, allowing a surge of vitality to flow through me. Right now, I am sensing life's energy within me. It is the source of my vitality. It calls to my awareness the interconnectedness of all things. It empowers me to approach each person I encounter today with love and tranquility, drawing upon this spiritual awareness, then, I cultivate courage today. And I do so by seeking common ground with everyone I meet. I'm confident in our shared connection to the divine wholeness. Recognizing my unity with all beings, I feel naturally inclined to support, to even bond with others. I am compelled by the call to love and to empathize. And I'm guided by the spirit of completion to see clearly and act wisely. Today, right now, I acknowledge that my life is an expression of the living spirit. And it causes me to embrace all aspects of life, all aspects of existence as holy, sacred, as a manifestation of divine energy. Viewing myself and others through the lens of living spirit, I extend a hand of acceptance, even affection and kindness toward myself and toward others. I understand that this, the path of giant gentleness is ingrained within my heart, natural. And it allows me to easily return to it, to remain at peace today. Come what may, I rededicate myself to staying attuned to its harmonious guidance.